The Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin. Investment professionals reveal their best mentors, how they find their next great idea, and a few funny stories. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Daybreak Europe podcast, available every morning on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. It's Tuesday, the 30th of April in London. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up today, Noel Quinn says he will retire as the CEO of HSBC as the bank announces a multi-billion dollar buyback.
The US Treasury says it plans to borrow almost a quarter of a trillion dollars by June.
And risky business. Two SocGen traders leave the bank after making undetected bets that could have cost the lender hundreds of millions of dollars.
Let's start with a roundup of our top stories.
Noel Quinn is stepping down as the boss of HSBC after nearly 5 years in the role. Quinn now says he plans to pursue a portfolio career, but will stay on in the CEO job until a successor is found. The board says it's looking both internally and externally for his replacement. The surprise announcement was made as HSBC reported a pre-tax profit of $12.65 billion, slightly beating estimates. The lender also announced a share buyback of up to $3 billion, with guidance for the full year unchanged.
And in other earnings news, Santander has reported results in the first quarter that fell slightly short of estimates. Net income at the Spanish lender came in at 2.85 billion euros, just down on the 2.89 billion that analysts had expected. The bank also reported loan loss provisions slightly below expectations at 3.13 billion euros.
Now, the US Treasury has bumped up its federal borrowing estimate for this quarter by 20% to $243 billion. The upward move surprised dealers after some had expected a downward revision. It comes as the IMF warned last week that US government spending is on an unsustainable path. Speaking to Bloomberg at the time, Deputy Managing Director Geeta Gopinath warned that a 7% deficit can't be sustained.
When the US is borrowing that heavily, that causes rates to be that much higher. It has implications for the rest of the world and for, you know, corporations and households in the US.
Gopinath's concern is reflected by Wall Street figures like Jamie Dimon and Ken Griffin, who have called the current level of borrowing irresponsible. The Treasury will set out how it plans to raise that money tomorrow.
Now, two traders in Hong Kong have left Société Générale after the bank discovered a batch of risky bets. The incident has raised questions about risk management at one of Europe's biggest banks. Bloomberg's Tima Adebayo has more.
Their transactions could have cost the firm hundreds of millions of dollars in the event of a market downturn. But a slew of risky trades from a couple of employees on Société Générale's Delta One desk still went undetected. Sources say internal risk management systems failed to register the activity because of a glitch related to their timing. This latest slip-up at Société Générale comes more than 15 years after Jérôme Kerviel, another Delta One trader, cost the firm $5.2 billion. In London, Tiwa Adebayo, Bloomberg Radio.
Scotland's First Minister Humza Yousaf has resigned, leaving the Scottish National Party leaderless months away from a general election. The head of the UK's third largest political party gave a tearful press conference.
I'm so blessed for having the opportunity that are afforded to so few to lead my country. And who could ask for a better country to lead than Scotland?
The fallout from Yousaf's resignation is likely to benefit the Labour Party. Earlier this month, Keir Starmer's party narrowly overtook the SNP in Scotland's polls for the first time since the failed Scottish independence referendum a decade ago.
China's factory activity expanded in April for a second month. Bloomberg's Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
The official PMI was 50.4 compared with an estimate of 50.3. Two positive months in a row isn't all that much, but it is the longest streak in more than a year, and it might suggest sustained recovery. Policymakers are leaning on manufacturing to offset weak consumption. Analysts say more public spending and a cut in interest rates will likely be needed if China wants to hit its growth target of 5%. Meantime, the Caixin manufacturing PMI coming in at 51.4, the non-manufacturing reading 51.2. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Radio.
Elon Musk's net worth is soaring after it plunged to the lowest level in a year. The entrepreneur added $18.5 billion to his fortune in one day, according to Bloomberg's Billionaires Index. That's after Tesla shares rallied following tentative approval for its driver assistance system in China and the unveiling of plans to introduce a cheaper car as soon as this year. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett has more.
In the past 5 days, the world's third richest person has gained $37.3 billion in net worth, according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. That's his largest weekly gain since March of 2022, just before he agreed to buy Twitter for $44 billion in one of the biggest leverage buyout deals in history. Since then, his fortune has tumbled just as often as it has increased after a breathtaking ascent in 2020 and 2021. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
We've had some numbers out from the German airline Lufthansa as well, announcing that it will initiate a cost-cutting drive at the airline business, which will include freezing projects, and it'll also review hiring in some areas. This is after the carrier was forced to pare back its earnings outlook for the rest of the year because of persistent strikes in Germany. So this is due to, it's looking at its full-year adjusted EBITDA, about €2.2 billion. That's slightly below the estimates. Earlier this month, the airline had cut its annual profit outlook and predicted that its adjusted annual profit would fall as the German airline absorbs the financial hit from those strikes.
Okay, so those are the latest earnings you need to know about. In a moment, we're going to get more then on the news from HSBC, plus a look at the US public finances with the issue around the Treasury and how much more money it's going to need to raise. But also this story from our colleagues this morning on the Bloomberg Terminal, writing about how an increase in the share of equity trading that is happening just in the very last few minutes of the trading day and what that means.
Yeah, look, Christina Lee's been writing about this, and she talks about how there's 390 minutes of equity trading, but really only the last 10 minutes seems to be what counts. And it's not just in the US. This is increasingly the case in Europe as well. In fact, 28% of volumes in European equity trading now happens in the closing auction period. And the S&P 500, it's around a third of trading that happens in those last 10 minutes. This is data from Bloomberg Intelligence, but also from the analytics firm Big XYT. So the problem here, if you listen to some arguing in the market, is that it's necessarily passive investing causing more problems. You know, these index funds driving the phenomenon because they buy and sell shares at the close, since the last prices of the day are used to set the benchmarks that they aim to replicate as well. It's, you know, this is part of the ongoing argument of active
argument
and passive investing.
Yeah, but you get it, right? If there are no active managers kind of making the decisions on and examining closely individual businesses, you know, that's the argument, at least, that perhaps passive investors are looking at the index as a whole and not stock picking.
Yeah, we'll get the full picture and both sides of that argument from Justina Lee's piece this morning on that rush to trade at the end of the day. Let's dig into the earnings from HSBC now, and the news that the bank's CEO, Noel Quinn, is to retire. Charlie Wells is here with the details. Morning to you, Charlie. Is this a big surprise then that Noel Quinn is leaving?
Stephen, this is a huge surprise, and it injects a lot of drama into what was expected to be a fairly regular earnings season. I mean, HSBC has actually been performing fairly well over the past few quarters, and so the question is, you know, why this departure? And Quinn, you know, was always a sort of not unusual, but maybe not cut from the cookie cutter mold of a lot of the other leadership at HSBC. His first job was actually digging holes on a building site, and he actually joined at a small bank that was ultimately acquired by HSBC in 1992. So really interesting career, and drama sort of encapsulated his tenure. You know, he really took over officially in 2020, March of 2020. That was the height of the COVID crisis. He really oversaw this bank amidst rising tensions between China and the West, China and Hong Kong. And so he says that he'd like to go on to build a, quote, portfolio career. It sounds like he wants to maybe focus on some passion projects. Let's see. But the bank is conducting a search, and we know that they're looking at both external and internal candidates.
Okay. The bank in and of itself also releasing results, and another major buyback, $3 billion, a sign then of the continued sort of bounty of all the higher interest rates that we've seen?
Yeah, so, you know, HSBC is a bank that is particularly sensitive to interest rates. And so the hope for a lot of analysts had been that maybe we would see some progress for HSBC and trying to move into other business lines. And look, the lines that we're getting out of the earnings are positive. So we're seeing pre-tax profit slightly beating estimates. We saw net interest income, net interest margin beating estimates. And some of the initial analysis that we're getting from HSBC is that there's been a positive story on wealth management. I think another focus will be on transaction banking as we try to see if this bank can diversify away. But one thing that's a little bit disappointing that's coming across is forward guidance for the year is looking like it's remaining the same from February. There'd been hope that in a world where interest rates might be staying higher for longer, the bank would have kind of revised that up. But it's looking like it's staying the same, at least for now.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at the first share price reaction in Hong Kong after shares reopening after the break. They're up by 1.4%. So interesting to see how investors are parsing the headlines coming out of here. Because on one hand, we have this change of leadership. On the other hand, we have the share buyback and the finances. Anything else standing out to you from the earnings report, Charlie?
Yeah, you know, I think it really will just be we're seeing that consumer accounts decreased. Compared to the fourth quarter of 2023. So that's striking. And I think what's really interesting for this bank is just this kind of pivot towards Asia. And that's something that Quinn, who has announced his retirement today, really focused on. He focused on simplifying the bank on that pivot to Asia and selling a lot of assets in the West. So we'll have to see how that comes down the line. But the buyback, I think, could, let's see how that plays out in share trading.
Okay, very interesting. Charlie, thank you so much for the reaction and digging into the latest results from HSBC. Bloomberg's Charlie Wells.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new monthly edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes today. American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Now, the US Treasury will need to borrow more money in the current quarter. It's increased its financing needs by $41 billion for the period until June. This as the US deficit is in focus ahead of November's election. Bloomberg TV anchor Kriti Gupta is with us for more on this story. Kriti, just take us through what has the Treasury said about its financing needs?
So it looks like they've ramped up their estimate for federal borrowing to about $243 billion. That is a $41 billion excess than the estimates that you had on Wall Street, and even within economists within the Treasury as well. Net, net, what you need to know here is that this number came in a little bit hot, but in the broader scheme of things, it's not that hot. So there's been a little bit of kind of mixed messaging around what this actually means in terms of borrowing. There's obviously a lot of sensitivity around it, given some of the deficit issues, some of the debt issues. But again, $41 billion, which is a lot for you and I, but we're not perhaps not a lot for the U.S. government.
But others and analysts, you know, talking about it being a rounding error. I mean, that's the flip side of it. What does it tell us, though, about the state of the U.S.'s public finances? Is it actually a cause for market concern? I mean, it's not the same, but obviously occasionally one's heard, you know, a Liz Truss type moment for the U.S. is a possibility. I mean, you know, it's a big statement.
It's a big statement, but not out of the realm of possibility. And I think one of the key things to remember about this number is that this is coming in the context of a buyback announcement that you're going to get later this week as well. So one of the big concerns here is a little bit, for the markets at least, less about the actual bottom line of the U.S. Treasury and more about kind of the liquidity circumstances of the U.S. bond market. And that's where this number gets a little bit tricky, because ahead of the FOMC decision on Wednesday, you're also going to get that buyback announcement. And right now, based on just this $41 billion excess, there doesn't seem to be a big question about whether the kind of quarterly refunding announcements that you're going to get later on, or the even buyback announcements from the Treasury, which were put in place last year to ensure that market liquidity, those numbers aren't changing just yet. No one really expects them to. And those are kind of the bigger ones to watch. The doomsday scenario simply being that if you start to see liquidity cracks the way we did in the middle of last year, or even the fall of last year, that would be a bigger kind of hit to not just the U.S. bond market, but global bond markets and by extension, central banks and economies than simply just this $1 billion. But that doesn't mean that there isn't enough sensitivity to it. You did see the markets react on what ordinarily a number they ordinarily would not react to.
Well, throw it ahead to to the what we're going to be hearing from the Fed then for us, Kriti. We, you know, are watching obviously to see what the runoff of Treasury holdings is from the Fed as well.
We are, and this is all about kind of the QT policy, and right now that hasn't really changed in terms of the selling. They don't actively sell bonds, obviously. They kind of let them just roll off their balance sheet and don't engage in buying new ones. This is why the Treasury is so important here, because in a way, because the Fed is rolling off these securities in their balance sheet, they're adding more supply onto their market, and they're not introducing kind of this buyer of last resort. The Treasury market is. They're actually recycling some of their. They're kind of getting rid of the older maturities, bringing on the newer ones. So that mechanism that a lot of people saw as kind of the QE element of the Fed is actually now coming from the Treasury. And that's why the Treasury, I would argue, matters a little bit more, especially ahead of, by the way, not just the Federal Reserve, but the election, January 2025. That's the deadline when we have these debt ceiling talks hit us once again.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, your morning brief on the stories making news from London to Wall Street and beyond.
Look for us on your podcast feed every morning on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
You can also listen live each morning on London DAB Radio, the Bloomberg Business App, and Bloomberg.com.
Our flagship New York station is also available on your Amazon Alexa devices. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130. I'm Caroline Hepke.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Join us again tomorrow morning for all the news you need to start your day, right here on Bloomberg Daybreak Europe.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.